Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers ended the weekend by regaining the game they lost to start the weekend. Plus, Mookie Betts is just a great person, and the Padres are falling apart. Let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. I also want to tell you to join Walking Baseball Encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past, featuring exciting guest interviews and routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts. Subscribe to Locked On MLB today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Locked On Dodgers is the daily podcast covering the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Central, flying solo today. Vince is at a wedding on Sunday night, and so I am doing the podcast on my own today. Lots to talk about. Great weekend. Not a great weekend. A solid weekend for the Dodgers. Would have been great if two different things had happened on Friday, but a solid weekend for the Dodgers. Going to talk about the series with the Reds, talk about the Giants series with the Braves a little bit. We're going to talk about Clayton Kershaw. I'm going to talk about Mookie Betts being awesome. And we'll probably talk a little bit at the end about the Padres. And they're kind of falling apart. And, not just to rub it into the Padres, going to tie it into the Dodgers. So that's the plan for today. But first, I want to remind you, please follow Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to Locked On Dodgers on YouTube if you haven't done that already. All those things. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right. So going into the weekend, the Dodgers were a game down on the Giants. And coming out of the weekend, the Dodgers are a game down on the Giants. And so, it can kind of feel like a wasted weekend. But after the way the weekend started on Friday, it feels a lot better, especially because one game is like the definition of striking distance. If the Dodgers went into the weekend down by three games and came out of the weekend down by three games with whatever it is, 12 to play, yeah, it would have been a bummer. Going in down one game and coming out down one game, obviously it would have been nice if they could have done better. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But, coming out down by a game, it's solid. It feels okay. I'd rather be in first place, but down by one game isn't so bad. On Friday, the Dodgers just couldn't get anything going against Luis Castillo. He's a very good pitcher. He hasn't always shown it this year. He has struggled a lot, but nobody denies that he is one of the most talented pitchers in baseball. And the Dodgers saw that. When he has his stuff working, he is almost unhittable. I mean, he throws 100 miles an hour with movement. He has a great changeup, great movement on that, great arm action. Basically when he can command it, he can dominate. And, the Dodgers maybe helped him out a little bit. They chased a few pitches, every chase isn't a bad job by the hitter. Sometimes it's a good job by the pitcher. And when you have as much movement and deception as Castillo has, that's going to happen when he's on. And when he's throwing it close enough to the strike zone that the hitters can't figure out what it is, yeah, he's going to get chased. And that's what happened. The Dodgers lost 3-1, didn't get anything going till the ninth inning. They finally scored a run. They threatened a little bit here and there. They made Castillo throw kind of a lot of pitches. So he should have been done after six. He pitched into the seventh, but was really done after six. He was over 100 pitches through six innings. It was it was not a great game for the Dodgers. And then it looked like the Braves were going to help the Dodgers out. After the Dodgers got done losing to the Reds, the Braves were pretty lackluster against the Giants that night, down 4-2 the whole game, basically. And then in the top of the ninth inning, Travis d'Arnaud hit a 3-run home run to put the Braves up 5-4. And then at the bottom of the ninth inning, Will Smith had two outs, nobody on, two strikes on the batter, Donovan Solano, and Solano hits a game-tying home run. And at that point, you're like, okay, well, the Giants are going to win this game. And they did on a walk-off sack fly by pinch hitter pitcher Kevin Gausman. Jock Peterson made the catch, wasn't in great position to throw, couldn't make a good enough throw. It was a dumb night. And after Friday night, you're like, crap, that might have been a turning point in the season. But luckily, you know, the Dodgers took care of business against the Reds, won pretty handily in each of the next two games. The Braves were not much help on Saturday, but then on Sunday, the Braves finally got a win in that series against the Giants. They beat the Giants 3-0. So in the end, at the end of the weekend, yes, three more games off the schedule, which is bad news for the second place team, good news for the first place team, but still within a game. The Dodgers now go to Colorado while the Giants go down to San Diego. And the Padres, we're going to talk more later about the Padres situation and how they are basically falling apart. They are, they're not very close in the wild card race anymore. They are fighting with each other. It's an ugly situation in San Diego. So the only question is, how much do they want to play spoiler? Because they've got six games left with the Giants and three with the Dodgers. And, you know, for whatever situation they're in, you know that they would love to just win all nine of those games just to say, you know what, we decided the National League West, even though it wasn't us that won. And they're not out of it in the wild card. They're going to be playing hard. They're going to be trying to win. Problem is, they're not very good. You know, they don't have much pitching, especially since Blake Snell got hurt. You know, on the bright side, Chris Paddock got hurt too, so they have to use a good pitcher in his spot, maybe, if they can find one. They have Jake Arrieta. It's rough. The Padres aren't very good right now, but they're very, very talented. You know, Fernando Tatis is still a very good hitter. Manny Machado is a very good hitter. Jake Cronenworth, I don't know. I think he's back. He fractured his finger, but I think they pulled the Padres and didn't put him on the injured list or anything. They have guys who can hit. And so there's always a chance. And hopefully, you know, with the Dodgers going into Colorado, who knows what to expect from the Rockies in Colorado. They have a pretty good home record this year, but they're not a very good team. So I don't really buy that. So it'll be interesting these next 3 days. It's very easy to see, you know, the Dodgers picking up a game on the Giants in the next 3 days. Maybe. I think it might take a sweep of the Rockies because it's hard to see the Padres winning more than one game. But the Padres won two games in their last four game series with the Giants. So anything can happen. And the key is the Dodgers have put themselves in position to be able to make a move, hopefully. And, you know, coming out of this weekend, like I said, after the way Friday started, that's good news. So I'm going to come back in a minute. I'm going to talk a little bit about Sunday's game, Clayton Kershaw getting built up, then talk about Mookie Betts being awesome and all that stuff. So keep it locked on Dodgers. Does this sound familiar to you? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. Hey, Dodger fans. This is Jeff with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about. It's called Get Upside. Our listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now. Use promo code BASEBALL and get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents per gallon cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use promo code BASEBALL to get up to 50 cents a gallon cash back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 or $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code BASEBALL to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. That's code BASEBALL. All right, I'm back. Let's talk a little bit about Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw pitched on Sunday. He came into the game. They said 5 innings or 75 pitches. He threw 5 innings and 74 pitches, I believe. He was right at that pitch limit, and he looked really good. His velocity was nothing to write home about again. Maybe a tick up from last time, but overall pretty similar to his last start. But one thing he showed is the velocity isn't the most important thing with him. He's got such a good curveball, such a good slider. And when he has command of those things, he got, I think I read this was his fifth time getting double digit swings and misses on his slider this season. And he had only done that, I think, four times combined in the last 4 or 5 years. And so, you know, the slider is a dominant weapon against both righties and lefties. It works differently against them. And one thing, I think I mentioned it last week after his last start, it seems like he's throwing the slow slider more. He's throwing it, you know, 84, 85 miles an hour, which it gets a little bit different movement, different depth. And he's kind of mixing that in with the hard slider still, you know, the hard slider that's more like 80, 88-ish. And it's really interesting to see him throwing both versions of the slider, and it's almost like it's a fourth pitch. You know, it's still the same slider, but it's different enough that I think he's keeping people off balance, not just with, is he going to throw the fastball or the curve or the slider? It's okay, I'm expecting a slider. Okay, which slider? And, you know, Clayton Kershaw could be a pretty dominant weapon in the postseason. Whether that's as the fourth starter, I assume that's what it would be. You know, he'd be the fourth starter, which, you know, great. That having a guy like Clayton Kershaw as your fourth starter kind of tells you what's going on with the rest of your rotation, which is all good things. So Kershaw as the fourth starter would be awesome. I guess there's a chance they might go with somebody different as the fourth starter and use Kershaw in more of a flexible role in relief. I expect him to be the fourth starter, I guess. I guess there's still even a chance they could make him the third starter and have Julio be that flexible guy. But Julio, I mean, Julio is going to get Cy Young votes. It's hard to see them at this point taking him out of the rotation for the postseason. When you've got Kershaw, who, you know, the interesting thing is he's at 75 pitches now. I think he's got two more starts this season, and he went from 60 pitches to 75 pitches. So he could reasonably be basically built up. You know, if he's at a point where he can give you, you can expect six innings from him. That's as much as you can expect. And it seems like he'll definitely get there in the next two starts. And so I think he's going to be ready to be a full-on starter for the postseason, and having him as your fourth starter is pretty awesome. So it was all in all that he came out healthy was the most important thing. His arm felt good. And really that's what we're looking for from Kershaw right now is, can he throw a baseball without his arm hurting? And it seems like he can. And so everything else is just a bonus, but it was a pretty good bonus on Sunday. He looked really good, just allowed the one run in five innings, struck out eight guys, just a really, really good performance from Kershaw, and kind of gives you an idea of what he might be able to give you in the postseason in whatever role they end up putting him in. So that's awesome. The other thing that happened on Sunday, TJ Friedl for the Reds, he had made his debut on Saturday, got one pinch hit at bat and didn't get a hit. And so he came up in, I don't know, the sixth-ish inning in Sunday's game, a pinch hitting role, or I don't know if he'd gone into a replacement, but it was his first plate appearance of the game. And it was Tony Gonsolin. Oh, yeah, it was the sixth, because it was the first pitch Tony Gonsolin threw in the bottom of the sixth inning. And Friedl hit it for a home run. And it was his first career hit, first career home run, and all that. And Mookie Betts, just being Mookie Betts, he remembered, oh, yesterday was his major league debut. I know he didn't get a hit yesterday, so you know, transitive property or distributive property, whatever math he did in his head. Okay. That means this was his first career hit. And hey, I'm standing 40 feet from the guy who caught his home run. So Mookie just motioned up to dude, hey, can I get that ball? And the guy just immediately, hey, Mookie Betts asked you for a baseball, you throw him the baseball, you know, and Mookie said he kind of sign language of, hey, you know, throw me the ball, kind of gave him the impression I'll get you a different ball, but that's a big deal. You know, so the guy, credit to this Reds fan, didn't hesitate at all, just threw it down to Mookie. Mookie tossed it in so that TJ Friedl could have the ball from his first career hit slash home run. And Mookie said when he saw how willingly the Reds fan tossed the ball down, that it wasn't, you know, that's an opportunity that when you catch a big hit like that, a big home run, you know, you always end up, guys will haggle. Okay, well, I want to meet the guy. I want to get an autograph bat, whatever. This guy just, you know, this is an important moment for TJ Friedl. Mookie Betts is asking for the ball, so he threw it to him. And so Mookie, instead of bringing out a baseball to him the next inning, he brought him out an autographed baseball bat, a Mookie Betts axe handle bat signed by Mookie, which is awesome. You know, Mookie didn't have to do that. It's, you know, it's not Mookie's responsibility to make sure that TJ Friedl gets the ball from his home run. If Mookie hadn't done it, somebody on the Reds, you know, team would have gone and found that fan and said, hey, Can we trade you something for that ball? They would have done the negotiation, but Mookie said, hey, I'm right here. I know how important this is to this kid. I'm going to do this. And I guarantee you that guy, you know, getting an autographed Mookie Betts bat instead of an autographed TJ Friedel bat, you know, maybe TJ Friedel grows up to be as good as Mookie Betts. I don't know, but getting that, you know, it was just all in all, it was one of those feel good moments that you sometimes get in baseball. You know, the fan did great. I love that after Mookie handed the fan the bat, he's walking up and you see a Dodger fan dad say, hey, can I get a picture of that bat with my son? The son's wearing a Mookie jersey. And the guy just hands the bat to the kid and the kid takes a picture holding the Mookie Betts bat. And like, it's one of the things, I know I get cheesy here sometimes. I'm sorry about that. But it's one of the things I love about baseball is it brings out the best in people. It brings out the worst in people too. Absolutely. But sometimes it just brings out the best in people. And I love that. You know, I love seeing, you know, it's not that important in the grand scheme, but you know that that's important to TJ Friedel and his family to have that ball and to have Mookie be aware of that, have the fan just be awesome. You know, yeah, he can have this ball. And yeah, kid, you can take a picture with the bat. This is, you know, it's just a cool experience for everybody. It's one of the things I love about baseball. You know, seeing a dad with his kid at a game always makes me happy anyway, because one of my favorite things about baseball is going to games with my kids. All in all, just a great little moment in a baseball game that ultimately, you know, I know it was talked about a lot, so you probably are heard the story. I'm not adding anything new. I just wanted to add on that, you know, my own view, just that Mookie is awesome and that he's aware of that. And after the game, they asked Mookie about it. And it was, you know, Mookie is, it's kind of funny. He's not much of a talker, like, to the media. But you can tell he's like, well, it wasn't that big a deal. I knew it was his first hit, so I got the ball for him. And then, you know, the guy was cool, so I brought him a bat. And, you know, it's one of the things I love about Mookie, that, you know, he wasn't doing that for any sort of acclaim or for recognition. He probably knew, you know, the cameras catch everything, so it wasn't a surprise to him, I'm sure, that the cameras caught it. But it was just a cool human moment for Mookie Betts and a baseball fan. And I love that about baseball. I love those human moments. So, speaking of human moments, I'm going to come back in a minute. I'm going to talk about two humans yelling at each other in a baseball dugout and, you know, their team kind of falling apart. So keep it locked on Dodgers. Hey, I've told you a lot about Built Bar. You know that. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar in the world, and it's delicious and healthy. You know, most protein bars, they have a lot of sugar. They have a lot of protein too, but they have a lot of sugar and they still taste like garbage. Well, Built Bar does not taste like garbage. Built Bar tastes like butterflies and rainbows. Actually, they don't have the butterfly and rainbow flavor anymore, but they've got 11 other flavors, I think. And you can go to built.com. You can buy a mixed box. Well, they'll just send you two of 9 different flavors and you can try them all. And you can say, you know what? This is the one I love. My current favorite, as you know, is the grasshopper cookie. It tastes like Thin Mints from Girl Scout cookies, except without all the guilt. Every Built Bar has like 17 or 18 grams of protein, 130 to 180 grams or calories, 4 or 5 grams of sugar and net carbs. They're all amazing flavors, tasty and healthy. And that is the best combination you can get. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Promo code LOCKED15 at built.com. All right, Jeff is back for one last segment. We're going to talk a little bit about the dust up between Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. in the Padres dugout. You probably saw it. It was, they were in St. Louis. They were struggling. Tatis struck out looking, was upset about the call. He threw his helmet down. Jace Tingler ended up coming out to argue with the umpire, basically to protect Tatis, and Tingler got ejected. And, you know, a lot went on in this encounter in the dugout. Apparently it was Coach Bobby Dickerson who first kind of called out Tatis a little bit. And then Manny Machado has a relationship with Dickerson. They were together in Baltimore, and he kind of took over and started yelling at Tatis, telling him, it's not about you. It's not about you. A lot of bad words said. Tatis was mad. Machado was mad. It's some funny pictures. You know, Machado's eyes are bugging out. He looks a little bit crazy, and he was angry, and you could tell. And, you know, it raised a lot of questions. The Padres put out a statement or said that basically Machado was showing leadership, which, Yeah, I mean, he's showing some leadership. Whether you want that leadership happening in the dugout where a fan can record it, I don't know about that. The Athletic wrote an interesting article about it. It was a few different Athletic writers. I don't remember all of them, so I won't name any of them. That was kind of funny. One of the lines said, yet rather than be accountable for the incident, they declined to make either Tatis or Machado available for comment post-game on both Saturday and Sunday. It always cracks me up a little bit the way the media thinks everything's about them. I get it. It's your job. You have to report on these things. But just the way they phrase it, rather than be held accountable, like, I don't know. I understand that's the role of the media, but I feel like it's one of those things that, like, there's things you shouldn't say about yourself. You should let other people say them about you. And I feel like the media being the ones to hold people accountable, that's something other people should say. I don't think the media should be the one saying, it's my job to hold you accountable. But anyway, you know, it's not about the media. As we know, this Padres, it's about the Dodgers, like everything. I just wanted to compare a little bit the leadership of the managers, because Jace Tingler, I don't know anything about Jace Tingler other than what I've seen of him managing, but it seems like the Padres are falling apart. And obviously bad performance can lead to a lot of emotions. But a manager's job is to manage players. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I am nicer to Dave Roberts than a lot of people are. Some people even call me a Dave Roberts stan. I'd have to know what stan means before I'd know if that's true or not, because I'm an old man. And anyway, Dave Roberts knows how to manage people. And that's one of the reasons I'm always in favor. Like, the idea of firing Dave Roberts has always made me laugh, because he has the skill and the attributes that can't be taught. Those people skills, they can't be taught. You know, they can be learned over the years, but they can't be taught. If you, I don't know if that distinction makes sense to you. You can't sit a person down and say, today we will teach you people skills. It's something you learn over the years. And I don't know when Dave Roberts started learning those skills. Maybe Jace Tingler could learn them, but Dave Roberts has them. And so even when he sometimes has hiccups in his on-field managing, you know, and I remain firm in believing that those hiccups are less frequent than a lot of you guys probably think. But the value of a manager who can run the clubhouse the way Roberts does can't be overstated. And so, you know, comparing that leadership of Dave Roberts to the leadership of Jace Tingler, that's what we're seeing. You know, another thing that jumped out at me in the Athletic article is it mentions that Eric Hosmer used to have a reputation for leadership, but he, in quote, it says he's no longer performing at an above average level. So putting aside the idea that Eric Hosmer was ever above average, like, he spent 7 years in Kansas City, which they're talking about, it was when he was at the Royals that he was a leader. He had a total WAA, which is wins above average, of 0.1 combined in 7 years with the Royals. So he has always been an average baseball player at best. So, but we'll put that aside. You know, it made me think, does a player actually need to be good to be a leader? You know, and I thought about Chase Utley. Chase Utley, when he was on the Dodgers, he was below average. Like, the whole time he was with the Dodgers, he was a below average baseball player. He still had value. You know, WAR and WAA are different. You know, wins above replacement is different than wins above average. You know, but Chase Utley was a below average baseball player his entire time in Los Angeles, but he was a team leader. And so I know it's kind of a dangerous precedent to set to compare somebody to Chase Utley, because, you know, I remember when Manny Machado was on the Dodgers, and people, whenever Machado didn't bust his butt as hard as he could have, people said, well, Chase Utley would have been, you know, it's like, if you compare everybody's hustle to Chase Utley, you're going to be disappointed all the time, because nobody hustles as much as Chase Utley. And maybe it's the same thing with the leadership. Maybe Utley had such a good career that by that point, the fact that he wasn't good anymore didn't matter. He had all that experience, but I think it was something about his personality too. I think Chase Utley is a leader, and maybe Eric Hosmer just isn't. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's been overshadowed by some of the dynamic personality. You know, Manny Machado is a loud personality, for good or for bad. And he's making more money than Hosmer. He's there longer than Hosmer. Maybe it's hard for a guy like Eric Hosmer to be a leader on a team with a guy like Manny Machado. And then you got Tatis, who's theoretically the on-field leader. You know, he's the shortstop. He's the center fielder. He's like that on-field captain, theoretically. He's the highest paid player, or at least the longest under contract, the biggest contract. you know, MLB worships him basically all the time on social media. There's so much about Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't know if Eric Hosmer's playing performance has anything to do with him not being a leader on this Padres team. I think it might just be that this Padres team can't handle a person like Eric Hosmer as their leader, you know? And so it was an interesting point. And I wondered, you know, I've thought about some of the Dodgers leaders over the years. You know, Juan Uribe was a Dodgers leader when he was on the team. He was a solid player, but I mean, they ended up trading him because Justin Turner was better than him and he wasn't going to get the playing time he wanted. That, you know, he wasn't the star player, but he was still a leader. He and Adrian Gonzalez kind of combined to do their best to take Yasiel Puig under their wings. You know, the language barrier for sure contributed to that. Other leaders that the Dodgers have had, obviously Clayton Kershaw is a leader, but a lot of that is more actions than words. You know, I assume you never, we're not in the clubhouse. We don't know for sure who the leaders are, but it seems like it is sometimes tied to performance. I mean, Clayton Kershaw doesn't have a choice. When you win 3 Cy Young Awards and an MVP, people are going to look up to you. You know, when you've been with the team for 14 years, like he has, people are going to look up to you. That's how it is. But then you have other guys who come in, you know, David Price came in, he assumed kind of a leadership role. David Price is not a good pitcher right now, but better than me. You know, I mean, compared to other major leaguers, David Price is not very good right now. He still has that leadership, and that's because of what he does. So I think I reject the premise that you have to be a good player to be a leader. So I don't think it's that. It's interesting to see what's going on with the Padres. It's not really very fun. It's funny. I've tweeted jokes about it for sure. But some of that is just kind of a coping mechanism because baseball is fun when every team is trying, and the Padres are bad right now. And obviously I want them to be good for 6 games against the Giants and bad for 3 games against the Dodgers in the next couple weeks. But baseball is more fun when there are more good teams. I think it's been really fun having the Giants so good this year. So the Dodgers are being pushed and hopefully the Dodgers can overcome. And if the Dodgers can win this division, it means even more with the Giants having this unexpected great season. If the Dodgers can win the division with that going on, that's awesome. You know, it makes baseball more fun. I think the Padres are going to be good next year. They still have this talent. They're going to get healthier. You know, theoretically, some of their pitchers who are struggling with health will come back. It'll be, you know, I think the Padres are going to be contenders again next year, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens this offseason because I think there's going to be shakeups in the coaching staff. Like reading the Athletic article, you wonder, like, is there a place for a guy like Bobby Dickerson on a team that has Fernando Tatis Jr.? Like, it seems like these personalities are going to crash into each other. Tommy Pham has had issues with Dickerson too. You know, Tommy Pham has his own issues. He's probably not going to be a Padre next year anyway. But you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them this offseason because they have so underperformed. That's going to come down on the manager and it's going to come down on the coach. It's going to maybe come down on the GM. All in all, it's been crazy to watch the last month or month and a half of the Padres season and just watch them go from World Series contender, World Series hopes to, wow, they are not even going to make the second wild card. And nobody would have predicted that. I predicted they wouldn't be as good as everybody was kind of saying, that the Dodgers would kind of run away from them. Didn't predict the Giants, but you know, I predicted the Dodgers and Padres dynamic a little bit, but I would not have predicted the Padres to be bad. And that's what they are right now, both on the field and unfortunately off the field. So that's about it for what I have today. Thank you all for listening and or watching. I always love talking Dodgers with you guys 5 days a week, every weekday morning. If you are not watching or listening every day, I would love it if you would add, you know, 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. Obviously we'd love it if you would subscribe on YouTube, subscribe or follow in whatever podcast app you use. Check us out. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, go ahead and tell them about it. They might like the show too. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. You can email us at LockedOnDodgers@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope that you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Betting on baseball doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts.